And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. My name is Jamie Waste. I'll be your host today with Jeff Brown assisting on the board. Today we're going to be speaking with Reach artist Mary Ann James about her first Friday art exhibit. We'll have a couple of folks from Perseverance Theater in the studio. They'll be here to highlight a new play workshop that's happening this summer featuring stories about Alaska. We're going to get a preview of Friday's third annual saxophone showcase concert, and we'll continue our series Words 101 with a look at running bookstores locally with Brenda Weaver, Tony and Don Birdseye, and Dee Longenbaugh. It's Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more today on KTOO News in Juneau.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A church boasting 1 million members and 5,000 congregations is calling on Ohio's Cleveland Indians to change its name and wants the baseball team to drop its Indian mascot, Chief Wahoo. This week, a formal petition was delivered at Progressive Field. IdeaStream's Brian Bull reports.
The United Church of Christ is based in Cleveland. Its call to action follows a formal resolution vote Monday that also targeted the Washington Redskins football team. The UCC wants a boycott of all Redskins games and merchandise, a move that pleases Tony Buffalo. She's with the church in the Cheyenne River Lakota tribe of South Dakota.
I hope that it does have an impact on them. We have had to continually put up with the war whoops, the face painting, the name calling. It continues to perpetuate that same mentality.
About 80 people marched towards Progressive Field with 3,000 signatures on the Indians' petition. A man wearing a Wahoo shirt was prodded by his friend across the way from the oncoming group, while another man made obscene hand gestures as they passed by.
Okay, this is a petition from the United Church of Christ.
At Progressive Field, a lone team representative, who only identified himself as Jake, took the petition. Organizer Linda Jamarillo is hopeful their message came across.
There's a groundswell of religious people across all faiths that they really need to consider that we are all about the negative stereotyping and 100 years is enough.
Defenders of Indian mascots say it's all to honor, not denigrate, Native Americans. Tom Murdoch, sporting a Wahoo cap, shook his head at the crowd.
It's been here 100 years, and I hope they never change it. I mean, it's one of the most recognizable logos in the world, not just the country, the world.
The United Church of Christ has targeted Indian mascots since 1991. The Indian spokesman did not return a request for comment. I'm Brian Bull.
The Pueblo of Acoma in New Mexico has joined Arizona's Hopi tribe in efforts to stop Native American objects from being sold in French auctions. Complaints filed in French courts and government have been rejected, with findings saying that tribes and individual tribal members have no legal capacity to challenge the sales. Acoma joined the fight after some auction items were identified to be from the Pueblo. Jonathan Sims is on Acoma's executive council.
Our request has been denied officially, and so what we are doing is following up, and we're going to appeal the process. We really don't know what will happen from there. We have a couple of other strategies.
Sim says those strategies include seeking help from New Mexico's congressional delegation and federal agencies. The Hopi tribe has gained support from Arizona's delegation. The tribes are also receiving assistance from the Holocaust Art Restitution Project, known as HARP, based in Washington, D.C. Sim says the time and money it takes to fight the auctions outweighs the possibility of bringing the items home.
These items are our linkage to not only our culture, but they're our linkage to also, you know, our past and our ancestors and our elders. These items were never meant to have a price put on them. And in our way of thought, you know, these items were never really meant to even leave home. In our mind's eye, we're bringing these items back home to their proper place. Sometimes it can be a tough thing to try to explain to people, especially now that everything is so commercial. The commercial value of something far exceeds the traditional cultural and spiritual value of something.
The Hopi tribe asserts Hopi people are vested in caring and protecting for their sacred items, which also cannot be transferred, sold, or removed from the tribe without permission. According to the Hopi tribe, 7 auctions have been held in Paris, which have included sacred items. The Hopi tribe has been fighting to stop the auctions for the last few years. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kowanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One. The Native American Radio Service.
And once again, welcome to A Juneau Afternoon. My name is Jamie Waste. I'll be your host this afternoon. And our first guests in the studio today, we have Mary Ann James, who is the featured artist at the Canvas right now. Mary Ann is a Reach artist, an artist involved with the Reach program. And her art has been selected as an exhibit. I believe the opening is tomorrow evening at the Canvas. So the opening for this exhibit is tomorrow, starting at 4:30 and running till 7. First Friday this month, obviously, the Canvas will be open and her art will also be available at that time. Go ahead, Phoebe.
Well, actually, the reason we're doing it on Thursday is because Reach and the Canvas will be closed on Friday.
Ah.
And so we're doing a first Thursday instead.
Okay, first mm-hmm. Thursday instead. Mm-hmm. But then her work will be up all month, is
uh-huh.
that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Oh, very good. So Mary Ann James, uh-huh. welcome to the studio.
Hey. I saw her baby. Saw her baby girl. I saw her baby name Kagi baby. I got a baby. I got a baby. I got a finger. A finger baby. A finger baller. Baller a baby. Baller.
Mm-hmm. So Mary Ann makes a lot of work. I think, are you talking about the baby?
Baby.
And so some of the themes in Mary Ann's artwork have to do with things that are going on in her own life. And I think there was a baby born in your family. And so some of the paintings and drawings that Mary Ann has are of babies. And there's one she's looking at right now that is of a baby named Kathy.
Mm-hmm. Mary Ann, have you been an artist all your life?
Yeah, wise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And have you worked with the Canvas for a long time? Have you done art there for many years? Mm-hmm. And have you had other paintings on display at the Canvas?
Painting and try.
Uh-huh. Have you always liked painting?
Yeah.
And what kind of painting do you do?
Painting brown.
Mm-hmm.
Painting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mary Ann uses watercolor mm-hmm. a lot. And she'll start with a drawing, usually in pencil. And then she tells the staff what images she wants to work from. So she'll come in with ideas, usually relating to her own life. And then we'll pick out a selection of images for her, and she'll pick and choose what she wants to work from.
So maybe talk a little bit about the program that she's involved with. I mean, you're describing her coming to the Canvas, and you're working with her, and or someone is working with her or not. Help me here, or not.
Sure. Well, the Canvas is an art studio that is for people with developmental disabilities. And Mary Ann comes in, and basically Phoebe and I are assistants in the process. So Mary Ann is a professional working artist, and we kind of help her make what she wants to make.
Yeah, we support the artists who come in by helping to set up materials, mm-hmm. helping to figure out what materials are best for each person to help express the ideas that they have. And we mix paint we're there just kind of, as supports for the mm-hmm. for the artists who come in, set up everything, set up all the paper, cut the paper to the right size, print out photos, and then, you know, and sometimes help determine when something needs, you know, when an artist needs to take a break from a piece to keep it from getting overworked, and help, you know, storing the artwork in a professional folder, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So that's our role.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Reach residents, they're in every day? Are they in every day working on their art?
So there's two sessions per day. There's a morning session from 9 to noon, and then an afternoon session from 1 to 4. And so artists come in, and, you know, we have different groups of people each day. And Marianne is somebody who comes four times a week. Yeah, 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. But there's some people who come just, you know, once a week, or some that come every day of the week. So, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Marianne, when you're at home, are you also painting, or do you just paint at the canvas?
I say home.
You mm-hmm. paint at home.
Painting house.
Mm-hmm. All the time.
Yeah, all the time.
Uh huh.
Yeah, Marianne's really prolific. She makes a lot of artwork.
Yeah.
And Marianne, at the canvas, how many paintings do you have in the exhibit? How many paintings will be on display for people to come and look at?
I say big house.
A lot of them.
A lot of them.
Uh-huh.
Probably about 20.
20.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. That's a lot. Yeah. Very good. So how often are Reach artists selected for having an exhibit? I don't get into the canvas as often as I'd like to. So is this a regular part of the program that they're selected for a solo exhibit in this case, or how does that work?
Well, this is the second solo show this year, and every December we'll have a group show. And Marianne's had a lot of work in the group shows. So I guess it kind of, the staff will kind of suggest, like, oh, these artists might be good for a solo show. They've got a lot of good work. They've, you know, they're at a point where their work is ready to be shown to the community. And
I think the plans for the future are that there will be more shows featuring artists who come to the Canvas program, because the Canvas is... you know, while it's a community art studio, and, you know, there's community classes for the wider community, it really is focused on people with disabilities. And so it's just really important to have their work featured in the gallery and have mm-hmm. that be the center of the program, even on the gallery side.
Typically, how many Reach residents are coming through the canvas on a weekly basis or a daily basis? I mean, is it a handful? Is it a lot?
You know, each class is different, like I said, but we have, you know, between probably 4 and 10 mm-hmm. students at a time mm-hmm. Who come in.
Yeah. Well, we're getting close to the end here. Marianne, tomorrow for the opening reception for your premiere of your art exhibit at the canvas, will you be there?
Yeah.
Good.
My poop? No. Susie say, why you say, who say love me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just, oh yeah, why you love me? Oh yeah? You tell Susie, you like it. Susie, you love me, morning and noon.
Mm-hmm.
Happy July, buddy.
Happy Fourth of July.
Indeed, happy 4th of July. So we've been speaking with Reach artist Marianne James, whose work has been selected for a month-long exhibit at the Canvas. And they will have their opening reception tomorrow evening, late afternoon, starting at 4:30 to 7. So please drop by tomorrow if you can, or if not tomorrow, then sometime throughout the month to see Marianne's work. And congratulations again, Marianne, on being selected.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for coming in, all three of you.
Yeah, thank you.
Happy July, baby.
Happy 4th of July.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 1st of July, 2015. The U.S. Postal Service introduced zip codes on this day, 1963, Zone Improvement Plan. It was in 1983 they rolled out ZIP plus 4, which added a hyphen and 4 additional digits to the end of the code to speed things up even more. Zip codes start with the zeros in the Northeast and get bigger as you move south and west. 1979, on this day, Sony introduced the Walkman, the portable cassette player. There had been cassette players around for a while, but Sony miniaturized it, made it portable. There was no external speaker. You needed headphones. It weighed 14 ounces, had a blue and silver chassis, and 2 headphone jacks so you could listen with a friend. It's the birthday of novelist Gene Stafford, born Covina, California in 1915, author of numerous novels, including The Mountain Lion, and also collected stories of Gene Stafford, which won the Pulitzer Prize when it came out in 1969. She died 10 years later and left her entire estate to her cleaning woman. It's the birthday of the man who told you to omit needless words. Omit needless words. William Strunk Jr., born Cincinnati, 1869, taught English at Cornell, where he published his little book, The Elements of Style. One of his students was E.B. White, who revised and expanded Strunk's book. It has sold millions of copies. And it's the birthday of the French novelist Georges Sand, born Lucille Aurore Dupin in Paris, 1804. She was raised by her grandmother, sent off to a convent to be educated, wanted to become a nun, then went to Paris, lived with her mother, got married, had 2 children. Her husband drank too much, was unfaithful, the marriage deteriorated. Lucille fell in love with other men, including the novelist Jules Sandeau, and while they were together, they co-wrote a novel, which was published under Sandeau's pseudonym, J. Sand. The publisher asked for another book. Lucille had written one, and she published it under the name Georges Sand. It was the novel Indiana. It was a big success. Georges Sand wrote more than 90 novels, 35 plays, a multi-volume autobiography, was one of the most famous women of her time, famous for wearing men's clothing, smoking cigars, and for her long string of lovers, which included Frédéric Chopin. She was friends with Turgenev and Flaubert, Zola, Balzac. Georges Sand, who said, "The world will know and understand me someday, but if that day does not arrive, it does not greatly matter. I shall have opened the way for other women." Here's a poem for today by Brendan Galvin, "Two Birds in the Evening." When that oriole whistled from the orchard, it seemed to be frankly asking, "You got a problem with that?" Its orange and black was brash as a high school letter sweater. No problem, no problem, except it seemed like Saturday night under the old Rialto's marquee again, at least until a ruby throat running a quality control check on a trumpet vine drew nearer, and I thought, this is what I'd like next time around, to be one of the air's accomplices, too quick for boredom and acrobatic in love. Two Birds in the Evening by Brendan Galvin, from his collection The Air's Accomplices, published by Louisiana State University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, with its Apron Project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for KTOO is provided by Davies Berry Insurance, serving southeastern Alaska since 1917, representing Allstate, Safeco, Progressive, as well as a variety of other carriers. 789-5900.
And we have in the studio Art Roach, Executive Artistic Director, and Tom Robinault, who
marketing, box office,
various other things,
just like all other staff members. Yeah.
Yeah. Perseverance Theater is once again here on a Juneau afternoon on KTOO. And you folks have a program coming up, I think it's July 11th and 12th, and this is called Summerfest Unplugged.
That's right.
And you have a sentence in your press release where you, I think you started your press release by saying, have you ever wondered how a play gets from script to stage? So you hooked me with a question. So tell us about Summerfest Unplugged.
Well, last year we did a full festival of produced work and then also work in progress called Summerfest. And this year we're stripping it back down to just the new plays in progress. And so what Summerfest Unplugged is a chance to see in a stage reading type of format two new scripts. One is called House of Dreams. The other is Into the Wild, based on the John Krakauer book about Christopher McCandless. And they're both plays that we're interested in producing in the future, but they need some more time and they need some more feedback. So it'll be a chance to see the current draft of those plays after about a week's worth of rehearsal with actors. They'll be book in hand or book on music stand or something like that. We'll figure that out during the course of the week. And then the writers will be there and be able to hear and learn from the audience and the actors where the writing is and what changes they want to make and how it works. And plays, of course, are written, but they're meant to be heard. So hearing them is a great part of the process for any playwright.
So if I go on more, is, so July 11th is that one play, and then July 12th is the
Actually, we have both plays are being read on both dates. So on July 11th, you can come see a reading of House of Dreams at 4 p.m., and then later that day, you can see Into the Wild at 7:30 p.m. And then on July 12th, it just flips. So on July 12th, it would be Into the Wild at 4 p.m. and House of Dreams at 7:30 p.m. And that, you know, you get a day pass, basically, and you get to see both programs. And in between, there's a chance to talk about the plays. And after the each reading, there is a chance to do a talk back with the actors and the playwright about the plays. So it's a really kind of more than just sitting and watching a reading or listening to a reading. It's being pretty interactive in the process, which is, you know, the audience is a very important part of the process, especially to the playwright. It gives them a chance to see how the audience reacts to this, to their work.
And each day there'll be some time in between the two plays to just mingle and fill. There'll be some written questions that you can leave us answers to or just talk to us about them. And then after the program in the evening, after the 7:30 reading, there'll be a post-play conversation about each of the plays. So there's a chance to get some audience feedback there.
So on the first day, on July 11th, if I'm in the audience, July 11th, the first play comes up, do they do the entire reading and then there's the interaction? Or
yes.
Is that how it's structured?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So is, and I assume there's some, maybe expectation isn't the right word, but you're hoping the audience is going to engage and participate, right? That this isn't just a reading and then they walk
right.
away. I mean, you're really hoping for people to speak their minds about what they heard or what the questions are or what about this, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and before the readings, we have the process of starting the six. You know, we have directors that are some directors from out of town that are coming in. We have actors from in town and a couple from out of town that are coming in. And we'll be working on these plays for that entire week before we perform them.
So have you done this before in this format?
Not quite. I mean, Perseverance does new plays all the time. We opened the theater in 79 with a new play that was commissioned and produced here. So we're always working on how to support writers well. And this particular idea spun off of last summer's festival, which was quite a bit bigger. But during that festival, we had a one-week period of time where we had, I think, three scripts that were worked on for a week, much like this, and then read with an audience out at UAS. And then a couple more that we just brought in and did quick one-day rehearsals and readings. And it was just, you know, a chance to hear them, get a sense of how they flow and how long they run and where the audience is engaged and where the audience maybe starts looking around the room or whatever. Really, really, really helpful. So this is an idea of taking that work that in the last few years, we've done it whenever we have time, and it drives us a little crazy because we're so busy anyway. So we're trying to schedule a time in the summer where we're working on new plays. Both of these plays are set here in Alaska and are really about Alaska, so it may be that in the future more of our new play work will happen in the summer when we can focus on it more, and that's kind of great. So we'll see. It's another experiment.
And last year we had a reading of Our Voices Will Be Heard,
yes.
Which you know, was part of that in the summertime, and that will actually be on the main stage this year. So that was a great step in the process of coming to the main stage and finding out how the audience reacted to that play.
Very important outcome of that reading was a chance. The play is set in Southeast Alaska, and it's a Tlingit play, and the playwright is Tlingit and Athabaskan. But it was really important to her to have it read in Juneau, where it's set, and find out how the response would be, and to feel confident about producing it. So it was, that was a big step forward.
The selection of two true Alaska-based stories, was that, I know it's by design, but what led to that selection criteria?
You know, last year we had an Anne Washburn play that's not Alaskan at all and is now being done at Playwrights Horizons next year in New York. So we do a whole variety of new work, but we're an Alaskan theater, and our mission is to make theater by and for Alaskans. So more often than not, the work that's under commission that's sort of in development is about us and by us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And do other theaters do this kind of workshop as part of their year-round season as well? Would they do, is this a similar, you might find this in other theaters?
You might find this in other theaters. At Portland Center Stage in Portland, Oregon, they have something called Jaw West, which is similar to this. There's the Colorado Summit of New Plays, which is in Denver. There's a lot of models out there.
Mm-hmm. We're kind of getting to the end here. Tom, and I do want to ask you just about what's new or mm-hmm. what's coming up, but maybe just, Tom, real quickly refresh. What are we talking about here? What's coming up?
Absolutely. On July 11th and 12th, we have our staged readings of two new plays that are about Alaska. House of Dreams on July 11th is at 4 p.m. and Into the Wild at 7:30 p.m. on July 11th. And July 12th, we have Into the Wild at 4 p.m. and House of Dreams at 7:30 p.m. And all these readings take place on the Perseverance Theater main stage.
Very good. So with our remaining minute or so here, I kind of joked with you guys earlier, no downtime at Perseverance Theater, like most nonprofits in the world, or most businesses, period. So, but anyhow, Perseverance Theater, incredibly productive, prolific institution. Summertime, you'd think things might slow down. That's probably not the case. But what's new? What's going on?
We're super busy in the summer. But there's wonderful news that's kind of connected to Summerfest, which is last summer when we were doing this festival, the National New Play Network, which is an organization of 30 core member theaters and a larger number of associates, came into the site visit to consider membership for Perseverance as a core member. And core membership means that we can help program their festival and take plays that are written in Alaska, maybe one of these two plays, and put it into the network as a part of a rolling world premiere. And there's some funding opportunities. It's a very visible thing. And they've just announced that we've been added to the core membership roles, which is just great for the theater and great for Alaskan writers, I think.
Another honor for Perseverance Theater.
Really,
so congratulations to both of you and the entire staff and all the supporters for Perseverance Theater. We've been speaking with Art Roach and Tom Robinault from Perseverance Theater. Thank you very much, both of you, for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie.
Well, I was toting my pack along the glen trying to catch a ride when along came a tour bus with 100 tourists stopped inside. If you're going down to Anchorage with us, you can ride. So I climbed into the bus, and when I settled down inside, they asked me if I'd seen a road with so much glacier sand. And I said, listen guys, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man, breathe that mountain air. Tundra, flat, and bare, man, skated, I've had my share. Yep, here in Alaska, I've been everywhere. I've been to Anchorage, Egigig, Elmendorf, Chicknick, Turnigan, Crow Creek, North Pole, Sunders Lake, Nikolai Glen, Highway Porter, Cheshire, Cold Bay, Peters Creek, Selawik, Wasil, Ankenick, Cooper Land, and North Bay, Valley, Seward, Icy Bay, Nancy Lake, Chalit, and Big Lake, and Sitna. I've been everywhere. Breathe that mountain air. Tundra, flat, and bare, man. Skeeters, I've had my share. Yep, here in Alaska, I've been everywhere. I'll bend a flat top, Icky X, channel iron, switch check, deep creek, colic, sudden beaver, soft duck, dead horse, caribou, resurrection, igaloo, Whittier, Nickis, Kitchu, Canan, the Barren Sea, Purgatory, Rainbow, Venus, Tanko, Ho, Long John, Bird, Paul, Sleeping Lady, Istar, Ivan, everywhere, breathe that mountain air, Tundra, Flat, and Bear Man, Skeeters, I've had my share, yep, here in Alaska, Ivan, everywhere. I've been the bird bear, Aniac, Trapper, Kiki, Chugiak, Cooper, Bessie, Dodd, Hunter, Creek, Dakota, Willow Creek, Skagway, Jewel Lake, Scammon Bay, Russian River, Kodiak, Mount, Vince, Chogiak, Chickaloon, Koya, Cook, Pork, Capana, Shagala, Canna, Cotton, Anna, Sourdough, Canna, Ivan, everywhere. Breathe out mountain air, Tundra, Flat, and Bear Man, Skeeters, I've had my share. Yep, here in Alaska, Ivan, everywhere. Been to Mud Bay, Cannery, Tail, the Rangabo, the Sea, Tannin, Off, Fish Creek, Gun Island, Scatter Peak, Hawk Point, Lack, Tacanel, York, and Noah, Tack, Beth, Moon, Gulliver, Anchor Point, and Pelican, Orbit, Donald, Smith, the Waterfall, Yet, Nest, Sandpoint, Yorkalina, Shishmerk, Cabalina, Ivan, everywhere. Breathe that mountain air, Tundra, Flat, and Bear Man, Skeeters, I've had my share. Yap, here in Alaska, Ivan, everywhere. I've been to Hope, Tunicats, if you catch, Cannon, Oma, too, Eagle River, Umiat, Alias, Yakutat, Girdwood, Kip, Nuck, Bear, Bank, Kevstock, Keynes, Keenan Point, Lay, Analyze, Flesh, Bay, Palmer, Chicken, Dillon, and Brood, Ben, Tarmigan, Clear, Homer, Tokyo, Rika, Summer, Lake, Chattanooga, Ivan, everywhere. Breathe that mountain air, Tundra, Flat, and Bear Man, Skeeters, I've had my share. Yap, here in Alaska, Ivan, everywhere. Yap, here in Alaska, Ivan, everywhere.
Support for this station comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, located at 1619 Glacier Avenue in downtown Juneau. July swim schedules are now available online at juneau.org/parkrec. Augustus Brown Pool is also offering swim lessons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings during the summer season. More information at 586-5325.
Saxophones. We have saxophone players in the studio now. I'd like to welcome, hope I get the names right, Keila Dubois, Eric Hedstrom, William Todd Hunt, and Greg. I don't know your last name.
Frank.
And Greg Frank. I should have known that.
Man with two first names.
There you go, Greg Frank. They are here as part of the upcoming, Friday, July 3rd, this coming Friday at Northern Light United Church, the third annual saxophone showcase, an evening of classical saxophone music. And right away there in the promotion, most people might scratch their heads a little bit and say, wait a minute, I normally don't equate saxophone with classical music. But I think that's part of the charm of what you folks are presenting. So welcome to you all. The performance is this Friday night, Northern Light United Church at 8 p.m. And this is billed as the third annual. So I'm intrigued from the get-go. How did this, and I'm not sure who should take the lead on this, maybe Greg, but how did this start? And congratulations on a third annual. That means there's some traction here in the community.
Yeah, it's really exciting to have this concert for the third year in a row. And it started, again, a few years ago. I wanted to put on a recital, but I didn't want to do it all by myself. And I wanted to play with a quartet, and I was always really intrigued in bringing some of my friends from college and other places like that up here to experience what Alaska is like. And I had an opportunity to get in contact with Eric and Keila and invite them to come up. It was their senior years at University of Idaho, and they were both studying music at the time. So it was just a really great way to bring them up, and they had some really great performances. I was also able to invite Hope Aldergetti as well, and she was the fourth member of our quartet, and she was just graduating with her degree in music. And so that started 3 years ago and brought Todd in. He was able to come in and conduct the saxophone choir at the time, which is just a large ensemble of saxophones. We had I can't remember how many members we had 3 years ago, but we've had probably about 13 or 14 members in the choir. And then afterwards it was all done, and I was just so relieved. I mean, it was such a big organizational project that I did. And someone came up to me and said, wow, well, this will be really great to hear next year. And in my mind, I thought, next year? I don't want to think about next year. And then about a year later, Eric sends an email saying, when are we going to do this again? And it was really Eric's email to the rest of the group wanting to do this again, that we did it, and then the third year was just something we expected that we were going to do again.
So Eric and Keila, this is your third year as well. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Oh, my second.
Your second? Okay. And you are the quartet, the four of you?
Correct.
Yeah.
So you've got listed, I want to hear a little bit about the selections of music and what have you, but you list the Aurora Saxophone Quartet and the Alaska Saxophone Choir. So somebody want to speak to what those entities are and how are they a part of the program on Friday?
Okay, I'll take that. So the Aurora Saxophone Quartet is, well, it kind of changes members, it seems, very slightly every year, although the idea is to have a core of people in this quartet who sort of continue the tradition of style and quality and all that kind of thing. But, you know, basically putting together some pretty difficult repertoire in like 5 days, which is essentially what we were doing again. And this is my second year playing in the quartet, so I'm pretty excited about that because I never get to play in quartets anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, I did my undergrad in saxophone performance and then went on to conducting and have hardly played since. I mean, I play some, but yeah, this has been great to sort of get my chops back into it and to, I don't know, spread the gospel of classical saxophone a little bit more.
And I do want to talk about that in a second too, but then the choir, what's the saxophone choir?
So the saxophone choir, it's something that, well, I did first as an undergrad, where you get like all of the saxophone players, you know, who can play, it seems, at all, and put them into one room, give them a whole bunch of music to be played together. And this can include saxophones that you normally see, alto, tenor, as well as soprano, sopranino, which is even smaller than soprano, baritone, which is, you know, a big one, but then you have bass as well that's below that. And so you get a really big, rich, full, organ-like sound, is, I think, a good way to equate sound. It's really neat, special, very emotionally captivating, I think, of sound.
And Eric, are all four of you in each of these groups then? So the choir, and then do you do some solo performance as well?
Yeah, and that's kind of what it was built on. Our first year up, we were Keel and I were finishing up college anyway, so we had solos ready to go, and it was the idea from the start where we all get up, do our own solos, and then come together as that quartet to kind of cap everything off, and then get the community involvement in with the choir. And then that's just kind of the foundation where we all do our solos, we all do our quartet together, and then same thing every year.
Mm-hmm. Keila, I mentioned it's classical music, and why don't you speak to that a little bit? I think somewhere in your literature or whatever I saw online, it talked about how the instrument was designed originally for this purpose, but it's been popularized in all these different ways.
Right.
But why don't you reconnect the general audience to the fact that it's a classical music instrument?
It is, too. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that. They think, like, oh, well, when I think about saxophone, I think about jazz. And that's great. I mean, it's obviously a great jazz instrument. But the classical side, I think, gets overlooked a lot. And I know that three of us, when we were going to college, and Todd, I'm assuming, too, we all have a very classical foundation with saxophone while playing jazz as well. So that's what we had spent, 4+ years studying. So we really wanted to showcase that, the saxophone being a classical musical instrument. And I think everyone seems to enjoy it and they think, wow, I didn't know saxophone could sound like that. And that's great.
Well, especially when you describe so many saxophones and when you said it sounds like an organ or what have you, I can just tell that once you've put it in that kind of a setting, it would take on a kind of a life of its own that most people probably haven't heard.
Yeah.
So Friday night, what are we going to hear? If for somebody who shows up, what's this lineup or the schedule or what do you call it? What's on the agenda? What are you playing?
We're playing, as with every year we've done, we have a wide variety of classical music that we're playing. One of the cool things is especially that I was really happy that we could infuse this concert with, and I'm sure everybody else here is excited about, is that since it's July 3rd and we're right close to the 4th, we're able to actually bring in a couple of really Americana type of music into this. So we have some of that. We also have some other pieces that are, you know, maybe, you know, that are a little bit more international flavor. We have a piece called El Capeo, which is a really fun piece to play. And so it's just going to be a variety once again. The solos are all different. They're all very, very different.
Yes, right.
Our quartet music that we're playing is very different from what the choir is playing. So it's just going to be, again, just like every year, we have a lot of different stuff that a lot of people can listen to. Whether if you want to be, you know, listen to something that's really easy with a very strong melody and something you can recognize, we have some of that. If you have something that'll be, you know, that you can really sink your teeth into, or your, I guess your sink your ears into, and really enjoy something, you know, something really deep and that has a lot of richness to it, we have that as well. So we just got a wide variety of stuff.
And this year is going to be really nice too, in the fact that with our solo lineups, with Todd's piece, it's very, very French, very, very classical. You know, what you'd expect to hear from pretty much all the other instruments. So it's nice that we get to hear it on saxophone. With Keela's piece being unaccompanied, it's going to be nice hearing extended techniques that you didn't really get to hear before. And then mine is going to be a Hungarian piece, actually. I'm done with piano. And again, in mine, we get to do some fun stuff that you don't expect to hear the saxophone to do every day. So it's nice that we get to kind of, you know, showcase different parts of the world in classical saxophone.
So this is a big effort on your part to pull this together. Is this just purely a labor of love? I mean, is this just you guys once a year saying we want to do this again?
Yeah, absolutely. It's so fantastic, especially for me. And I know Greg, too, we don't play as often as we used to in college. Like, I went to grad school doing something completely different. So it's really great to come back and just play for the enjoyment of playing. I love it.
And is just Juno, or do you go to Anchorage or Fairbanks, or is Juno the spot?
No, maybe we'll do that next year.
What do you think, Greg?
What do you think, Greg? We need to up the ante a little bit, maybe. Or maybe we'll hit Sitka first. Actually, you can let us know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Opera to Go is the website, and it's the producing organization for this. So you could send an email to info@operatogo.net and let us know what you think. If you said, yeah, you guys need to come to Petersburg, let us know, because mm-hmm. if there's support for that kind of thing, we can make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
So
We also have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/saxophone showcase. So if you're on Facebook, go over there, check us out, like us to see what we've been up to, and you can leave us your feedback there as well.
Yeah. And just real briefly before we go, careers, are you all in musical careers? This is all sideline project, keeping your passion and your creativity going while you have to work for a living?
I'm managing to make 90% of my income now in music, mm-hmm. so yeah, I'm very pleased about that.
Uh-huh.
But I don't get to play very much. So, yeah, this is the big benefit for me.
Yeah.
And I work for a music company, actually in Silverdale, Washington, Ted Brown Music, family-run business. You know, we do the music retail, but also we get to do lessons, clinics, and all that good stuff to really kind of show off, you know, everything else about music that essentially isn't retail. So I'm doing my private lesson studio with the company. Got numerous students in both on saxophone and clarinet. It's going to be my stepping stone into my formal teaching career in a public school.
I actually just graduated with my master's in library science, so something totally different. So this is definitely just, you know, doing something for enjoyment and being able to keep playing as much as I can, which is great.
Yeah, and this is a enjoyment project for me too. I just got done with my very first year of teaching up in Fort Yukon, Alaska, and signed another contract to go back next year, and excited about that. And so for me, you know, especially since this was my first year, I mean, all my energy was really put into my job, and so being here and being able to play is a real enjoyment.
I think you all know Juneau is an extraordinarily rich musical community and artistic community, and I'm hoping you get a really good turnout. This is the third annual saxophone showcase. It's happening this Friday, July 3rd at 8 p.m. at Northern Light United Church. $5 admission. You guys, your price point's way too low for what you're going to give them. Keila Dubois, Eric Hedstrom, William Todd Hunt, and Greg Frank, thank you all for coming into the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
On the next reveal, a doctor who has to act like a detective just to treat his patients.
They were careful encounters, always sworn to secrecy.
Tracking down the trade secrets behind sick workers at the most innovative high-tech companies in the world. That's on the next reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Tune in this Thursday at 7 for the premiere of Reveal.
And this summer on a Juneau afternoon, we're featuring a series. It's called Words 101, and we're hoping to highlight the written and spoken word. And today our topic is bookstores, or more specifically, running a local bookstore in the year 2015 and the internet age. And we have here in the studio local bookstore owners, Brenda Weaver with Hearthside Books and Toys, Tony and Don Birdseye from Rainy Retreat Books.
Hi.
And on the phone we have Dee Longenbaugh of the Observatory. So welcome to you all. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks.
Good to hear you, Dee. It goes without saying reading, literacy, books are just so important, such a huge part of our society and our culture. And I think for all of our lives growing up, books were books. And now here we are in the internet age and, media and the ability to access, written content has changed profoundly. So I'm just curious, for you folks, local business owners with bookstores, how are you adapting to that? And what kind of, a bookstore in the modern age, what kind of adaptations have you had to make? And I'll just start here with Brenda because you're closest to me.
Well, there's different models for bookstores. We are an independent bookstore, and independent bookstores have changed some of their business models from being pure books to having additional materials and sidelines and things like that. There's also the ability on a lot of independent sites that you can download electronic books. But I find that most people really like to have a book in their hand, and who's buying electronics are buying electronics, and who want to buy books are buying books. And so you just really take advantage of really paying attention to when you get those special deals from publishers and things, because the books come pre-priced. You don't get to choose your price.
Now, each of you have a bookstore that's slightly different than the other. So for the Bird's Eyes here, same question, just the internet age, has that presented any particular challenges for you?
Well, books are books. and we appeal to the people who like the smell of books. And there's nothing as a store owner you can do about the appeal of the internet to book readers, because that's out there. It's a bad deal. You pay $10 for a book and you get to read it once and you don't get to share it with anybody, and it stays with you forever, and that's not really a good way to treat a book. There's book lovers, and book lovers come into the store. Our customers self-select, and we're here for them.
Because we're a new, used, and rare bookstore, I think that the people that are into ebooks, and there are many good times for ebooks. They're particularly useful in places where there are no bookstores and it's hard to get them. They're particularly good for people who have eye problems and they need to be able to adjust the font so that they can read better. But people who are looking at used books are not necessarily looking at the bestseller list. They'll come in, they'll want a book. They won't think to go to the internet to get a used book. They want to read To Kill a Mockingbird, or they want to read Catch 22. They'll go into a used bookstore to look for it. So in that respect, I think that the used book business has not been hurt quite as badly as somebody like Hearthside, who sells all the bestsellers. We don't try to do that. That's our little niche. Mm-hmm. Our niche is different from theirs. But it's still, there are, it definitely does take a toll on the business. It does. There are people who are completely attached to their e-readers. But most of the studies find that the people who buy e-books also buy more books. So it just encourages reading, and that's the good part.
Mm-hmm. And Dee, for you, I realize antiquarian books, maps, and prints, you've got a whole other niche here in the book world, But the impact of the internet, good or bad for your service?
I think it's a mix. It's just one of those things you have to learn to, accept. It's sort of like going from old typewriters to the electric typewriter to computers. It just takes getting used to. One of the reasons, though, that I think is wonderful having a bookstore, and I'm sure the others here will agree, and that is the cruise ships. Because in the first place, if you don't like books, you don't come in. And that gets rid of a whole lot of boring people. And then if you do like books, you come in the store, and there are some very, very interesting people. And they're just very pleasant, and it's just great fun. I would never have a jewelry shop here, for example. Mm-hmm. But I'm very glad I have a bookstore. And as I say, I bet the others do too, are too. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely, yeah.
Don, you said a book is a book, and I totally understand what you're saying. Reading is reading. People are gonna they're gonna read.
But I find that there are a lot of people, including young people, who supposedly are just happy with nothing but e-books. They say, and I've heard this, and I bet the others have as well, and that is, oh, there's something about the smell of a book and the way it feels in your hand. And I get that a lot. Yes, there are. I've noticed when I'm flying someplace that increasingly, and that makes a bunch of sense, why not have an e-book with you? They're, lightweight and easy and put a lot of stuff on there. But they don't replace the book.
So what kind of, the internet's been around a while now, and you can access books online. That's been the case. So Brenda or anybody else, but we'll start with Brenda. I think a couple of you have mentioned there's research that indicates people still want to read, or this, that, or the other. Is that initial kind of rush to e-books over? Do they have some sense of maybe there was an initial gravitation to new technology, but But has it plateaued out? Or is there any sense of like it's reached some kind of equilibrium between people who just want to buy a good old book as opposed to be an e-reader?
I did a lot of research before I bought the bookstore for this purpose as well. And what I found is overwhelmingly is those who are on e-books are buying e-books, and actually it's starting to decline a little bit. It's mellowed out, leveled out, and then in the last 5 years, more people are starting to go back and buy more books as well. And there were several reasons cited, but I could not, you know, I don't remember them all, but mostly it was, yeah, that was fun for a while, and I can't hand it to my friend, or I want to be able to put it on my bookshelf. I've got a signed book, or I don't want to keep buying a new e-book reader just because there's something like the new phones. They're kind of getting technology wary of everything that has to be new and every couple years.
Yeah, well, this is Dee, and I remember about 3 years ago.
Don't look at me. I can't be responsible for the e-book market.
Anyway, in summertime, one guy was telling me he just couldn't imagine his bookshelves being full of Kindles, which I think is a good point.
So for Tony and Don, how does it work for your store, the accumulation process? How do books come in? How do you stock your inventory? How does that work for you folks?
90% of our books come in from the local readers. And as you can tell from the broad range of areas, they read a lot and they read everything. So people will bring in books that they want to sell, and we look through our inventory. We try and buy books we think we can sell, buy books that are in good condition, and then we will offer them cash or credit for them. And if they accept it, then they go into our used stock. About 20% of our stock are new books, almost all Alaska related, and largely for tourists and visitors. Those we buy new. But the large majority of our books, and in particular the bread and butter for us, are used paperback novels of all genres. And those are the kind of – that's what brings people into the store time and time again, is that they'll get an author, a suspense author, and say, wow, I just read one book. I wonder what else he read. And they'll come in looking for it. So, and as I said, most of the books come just from the locals, just from what they read.
Dee, how does it work for your shop? How does new stock, well, it's old stock, but how does the new old stock come into your shop?
Very much has been described, except I don't carry new books. But other than that, yeah, people will bring them in. I always ask them to please, well, I get two kinds. One is people call and they say they have this book, and I say, well, that's very nice. And would I like to buy it, and how much could I pay them? And I have to say, I always, of course, have to say, well, I need to see the book first, because condition, of course, is a huge factor in determining price. And then when they bring the books in, and I tell them I don't carry paperbacks as a rule unless they're on Alaska, and I prefer that that's, you know, the only way they come. Anyway, so they bring them in, and I'll give them a price, and that's fine with them. I don't do anything with the books until they say yes, it's all right. Or if they do, if they say no, they don't want it, well, then they can take the books back. Normally they do take it, but just want to let them know. Anyway, it's a fun business, isn't it, guys?
Yes.
Yes.
And just finally, Brenda, we're coming up to the top of the hour here. Your decisions on stocking in this day and age, what's the main thing that's guiding your decisions on selection?
The main thing that guides my decisions are I have access to the Internet, and there's a conglomerate. Authors and publishers put their catalogs on there. And I can go through and look at how many they're printing. I can get a synopsis of it, of the book, and things like that. And so those are the main decisions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, sorry, we have run out of time. I realize we're probably just getting the conversation started here. But I want to thank – so we've been talking about running local bookstores here in Juneau. Brenda Weaver from Hearthside Books and Toys, Tony and Don Birdseye of Rainy Retreat Books, Dee Longenbaugh from the Observatory. Thank you, all of you, and thank you for having small businesses here in the capital city in support of the people who live here.
And thanks for the support of the people to keep us here.
9 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
On those specific crime problems or specific crime locations.
How police are responding to what appears to be a rise in crime rates after decades of decline.
For Wednesday, July 1st, this is All Things Considered from NPR News.